Hallo auch von mir, einen schönen, heißen, wunderbaren Nachmittag. Ich bin der Alex Görlach, Herausgeber und Chefredakteur eines Online-Debattenmagazins, das den schönen Namen The European trägt. Vielen herzlichen Dank an die Adenauer-Stiftung für die Einladung. Vielleicht starten wir. Ich möchte nicht zu viel über den Obama-Wahlkampf sprechen, weil wir da auch selbst in Deutschland schon sehr viel gehört haben. Aber Sie sind alle Experten im Online-Wahlkampf und deswegen kann ich mir diese eine Frage nicht verkneifen, vielleicht auf diese Seite des Panels. Sie sind alles Experten, Sie sind alle super gut, aber warum hat Obama denn noch gewonnen? Was hat er besser gemacht?
A lot. I think one of the great lessons that Obama integrated into his thinking early on was he made a tactical decision to fundamentally embrace technological change. And in the context of the nominating process for president to win the Democratic primary nomination, his team wisely recognized the likelihood of a long and protracted battle, probably not as long as they ultimately thought it would be. But the way that the Obama campaign used social networking, viral web-based communication and video content to organize, energize, list build, and then monetize their campaign was groundbreaking. And so fundamentally, I think one of the key strategic decisions that the Obama campaign was to not resist technology, but to embrace it and to integrate it in a fundamental way. And they did that by empowering and resourcing the campaign appropriately so that they had they took it seriously. I mean, obviously, one of the co-founders of Facebook was full-time on the effort, and they had, to put it in context, I think Mindy can fill in the specifics, but about 75 or 80 professional staff working on their new media campaign team. In the general election, McCain had 4 or 5. So that was a smart move.
Yeah, what was remarkable about the Obama campaign was not that they were so extremely savvy with technology and that they understood technology in a way that others didn't, because certainly that was the case, but that they took a very, what I would say is a common sense approach to using new media and the internet and integrating into their campaign by understanding that it was necessary for them to approach their campaign in a different way than their main opponent in the primary, who would be Hillary Clinton. And frankly, before, in a previous election cycle, even in the 2003-2004 presidential election, a candidate like Barack Obama, may not have run when he did for president. But had he run, I don't believe would have gotten as far. And we saw candidates like Howard Dean challenged when they tried to overpower the traditional campaign structure through a grassroots one-to-one kind of collective movement approach and fail. And the Obama campaign recognized that they had an enormous opportunity, in fact it was their only opportunity to succeed, was to focus less on winning over the traditional structure that obviously was still important, but they weren't going to be able to rely on that solely. Instead, by empowering many new voters, new activists who hadn't been involved before or hadn't felt reached out to or valued before through technology, they would be able to overpower the traditional structure, and that's something that they did very successfully.
Yeah, I'll just add that, I thought they used technology very well, but one of the things they did I thought extraordinarily well is give people who wanted to be engaged in their campaign avenues to do so. I think a lot of times what's changed about the internet and about campaigns is that in the past you had to have direct contact with the campaign. You had to go into the campaign headquarters or, talk to the local leader in order to get engaged, in order to get the information, in order to get the tools to go out and do the things that you do to win a campaign, whether it's in the old school sense of canvassing voters or making a phone call or the new school sense of using your social network on Facebook to contact your friends about why Obama, or why they should be voting for Obama or any candidate. They empowered folks to do what was necessary to take advantage of the campaign. The other thing I think, though, that is important to say about the 2008 campaign overall, that was manifested itself in many ways, whether it was bodies in the phone banks or people doing things online, is the Democrats were very excited about their opportunity in that election and very excited about their candidate. The Obama in the primary, the Obama activists were obviously very excited about him, and they ran a very smart campaign that was not riven by some of the divisions in the Hillary Clinton campaign that can thwart the effectiveness of your effort. But they had a great environment to run in. You can build a great online platform for people to volunteer or give money, but if people are not excited about being part of that campaign, if they're not inspired by the message of it, that's not really going to matter. And that was the other thing I thought the campaign did extraordinarily well.
So, Terry Phillips said that the Obama team, they really embraced technology. This is something we say conservatives are not really eager in doing so. Do we really lack to be inspired and excited about things like the web?
I'm sure we all have an opinion about that. I think, you know, Democrats have been advantaged in part by, I think it was Phil that mentioned, that the co-founder of Facebook was part of the Obama team. A lot of the developers in the U.S. are much more liberal-leaning or Democratic-leaning than Republican-leaning. And so they have much more direct access into the knowledge and ability to do some of these innovative things than Republicans have had. I think that they have had, the Obama team specifically, had much more focus on it and a desire to do it. You know, oftentimes, Mindy's right, even though there's a little bit more of a tradition in the Democratic Party of taking somebody who's not the establishment leader, even so, Obama did an extraordinary thing in defeating Hillary Clinton, who was the Democratic establishment. And, you know, part of the way that he did that was through utilizing online tools and not always relying on the traditional ways that campaigns have communicated and activated voters. I think the final thing, and you know, Mindy's done a lot of work in the U.S. to change this, the final thing is the focus of the party on integrating these tools and making them important to the campaign. I think that they're Republicans have not been as dedicated to it generally, and you know, some campaigns have not been as dedicated to it specifically as they should have been. And because of that lack of dedication, I think that we were a little bit behind. Part of that, though, I'll just say as a little corollary, is that, and you see this now, I think, the folks who are engaged online during the Bush administration, the Democrats who were engaged, did it in large response to their anger at how the Bush administration was conducting policy. And you see a lot of Republican activists online, pardon me, I'm recovering from a bit of a cold, you see a lot of Republican activists online now who are angry about the way the Obama administration is implementing policy. That emotion behind behind the two sides, it's dissipated now for Democrats, it's increased now for Republicans, has really been a motivating factor for all kinds of online activity.
For Obama, it's not just the Republicans who are mad. Obama's lost big chunks of support on the progressive left. There has been a fundamental sea change in terms of being candidate Obama and President Obama, because the structure of government puts a lot of walls around what you can do in an open environment around the internet, where creativity, lack of rules, lack of accountability is what drives a lot of the interest in what happens online. And I would say, as it relates to the Republicans, I think that tactically the Republican Party has, in the last year and a half, made huge advances in terms of embracing technology in campaigns. Where the fight still exists is how to appropriately resource that in a way that's relative to where people are going to consume information online. you know, in, about politics. I mean, newspapers, television, still the 80-pound gorilla. But obviously, as we more and more Germans and more Americans go online to inform themselves about politics, the putting the money behind the campaign message delivery process is still being sorted through in campaigns. One of the campaigns that was a model for advancement was one that Mindy ran for Bob McDonald. How many have heard of Bob McDonald? He's the governor of Virginia. And so he, a year after Barack Obama was elected and won the state of Virginia, which is right next to Washington, D.C., for the first time in two decades, just a year later, relying heavily on a steady message, but also creative use of technology that she designed and implemented, they were able to raise record amounts of money, millions of dollars, and reach and register tens of thousands of voters who turned out. And it just shows you that the final point I would make is that technology and the internet has quickened the debate in both of our countries in such a fundamental way that the news cycles have become so short and so quick, and they've fundamentally transformed how you would run a campaign 10 or 15 years ago in terms of how you run one today. And successful campaigns looking ahead, for those of you who work in the political environment, have to fuse the old strategies of working with the traditional media and integrating the new strategies of reaching the new media and elevate people who do both of those onto a common pedestal under a communications umbrella.
I would say prior to 2008, some Republicans would use as an excuse the idea that Democrats or liberals inherently have a better grasp of technology. And there's some truth to that, as Terry mentioned, that a lot of the developers, the people who develop technology, the tech companies, the creative people tend to lean left. But the users of the technology and social media does not lean one way or the other. It's definitely, first of all, I don't know that it really ever has, but certainly we've seen it equalized this election cycle and been able to recognize that it much more depends on where the unifying, where there's a unifying grievance, a unifying anger. And so, as Terry mentioned, throughout the Bush years, 2000 to 2008, that unifying anger, there was some anger on the right, but the largest unifying anger was on the left at Bush, at President Bush. Whereas now, with Obama's election, there's a much more unifying anger on the right, and we see amazing things happening through technology and through social media. An example being Scott Brown. How many of you heard of, in Massachusetts, Ted Kennedy's seat? Anyone hear about what happened? I see some head shaking. Where this is a state that is very left-leaning, was represented by Senator Ted Kennedy, who was one of the liberal heroes of the Senate, referred to as the Lion of the Senate, and you know was almost certain, everyone believed, that his predecessor would be a liberal, would be a Democrat, and the Republican, you know, was not even given paid attention to. And through sort of a unifying grievance against Obama, health care, and a lot of the legislation that was happening, and through that campaign's very smart focus, similar to Obama, on grassroots outreach to individuals through technology, giving tools to individuals to empower them to take part in the campaign, that candidate won by more than 10 points. A Republican won in Massachusetts, and it was this really amazing thing that I think most of us would say would not have happened before the internet. And one other point is that we use this term technology, this umbrella term of technology, but there's really two pieces of it when it comes to politics. There's the technology that we see, which is the blogs and social media and the email campaigns and the websites, and there's the technology that we don't see. And that's the voter targeting and the databases and the smart things that people are doing behind the scenes. Republicans throughout 2000, 2002, even 2004 were very, very smart in the technology that you don't see, in the database. And so because of that, they were able to be very, very successful relying on that solely. Unfortunately, I think they got complacent thinking, well, we're smarter when it comes to targeting. We're smarter on this technology, and that's going to be enough. But the dynamics are such now that social, the interactive web, when I say social media, I don't just mean Facebook and Twitter. I mean an interactive web, the ability for every individual to have a voice, to have a say, to participate in the process through the web, is so powerful that if you're not dominating in that piece, if you're not making sure to do everything you can in that aspect, as well as the behind-the-scenes technology, the technology we don't see, then you're going to have a disadvantage. And just not to harp on the Obama campaign, but they were very smart with both the technology that you don't see and the technology that you see.
We heard like a lot about anger. So we have a new few election next year coming up, and the Christian Democratic Party is tries to attain power in some countries or to keep it. So and at the same time, there is kind of some anger in the government is led in Germany by the Christian Democratic Party. So what would you guys now recommend those campaigners not to get the anger against themselves, but to use it for their own campaign and winning the game? No, that is something. I mean, you guys dealt a lot with the anger. So, how do you deal with that?
I think it's a good question. I think it's a very difficult question to give a straightforward answer to, or a simple answer to. If you look back, I think at the Bush administration and the series of events that led them to where they were in 2006, 2007, and 2008. President's approval was very low. The ratings on whether the country was moving in the right direction were very low. It got to a point where it was hard to see how anything but an external event was going to change the dynamic for President Bush. So, and an external event is, typically going to be some kind of national tragedy where the president could reassert leadership and have people take a fresh look at him. When you get to that point and there's that kind of anger in the electorate, it's very hard through the normal policy steps and the normal give and take with the press, it's very hard to get people to take a fresh look. And so the first step, if I took your question right, there's anger brewing against CDU. The first step would be to diffuse that as quickly as possible. Obviously, it's a very difficult time in every Western country with the economic situation and the policy choices that politicians are going to have to make. But if, I would, just looking at it and not knowing just a tiny bit about it, a fraction, the thing to do is to not let it build, to find some policies that you can talk about that the public can get behind. And, maybe do a little bit of the look at the shiny ball over here, voters, and, don't get too angry about what we're doing. When you're on the other side of it, it's very easy to motivate people. And that's the problem with anger, is that it's a very motivating force. And when the opposition becomes angry about the policies that are being undertaken or fearful that those policies are going to lead the country in the wrong direction, it becomes very motivating for them to give money in the U.S., to give money, to volunteer, and to get out and vote on Election Day, which is ultimately the biggest expression that most people can take. So not a very simple answer, and maybe not even a very good answer, but an attempt at one.
The number one thing I would say is don't ignore it. I think before an internet era, not that it would have been 100% ignored, but there may not have been any action taken, thinking if it's a minority of our constituency that's angry and that they're the vocal minority and it's okay, we don't, even if, we're going to get them to turn out to vote for us anyway or we're going to get enough people to turn out and vote for us, but they have the platform now to be extremely loud and to cause a lot of damage. And I think we've learned that if you ignore it, it's not going to go away and it's going to be worse. And I'll give a couple examples of in the U.S. where people approached their constituency being unhappy with something that, they did. These are 2008 examples. One, during the Obama campaign, I know we said we weren't going to harp on it, but there's a lot of good examples. During the Obama campaign, there was a bill before Congress on surveillance. It was called a FISA bill, a piece of legislation about surveillance. And President Obama took a position that was counter to what most of the progressive, the left of center activists favored. And because President Obama had a website and a blog that was open that allowed people to comment, as well as his social networking profiles, his own supporters used those platforms to turn against him. This was during the general election, to turn against him and to kind of express their anger. And there was, the comments were overwhelmingly negative against the president's position. So there was a couple things that the president could have done at this point. He could have, you know, denounced his position, changed it, because the majority, it looked like, of his supporters were taking a counter position. He wanted to save his reputation. He could have ignored it. You know, there were a few things he could have done, but one thing that he did, which was very smart and did help diffuse the anger, was he created, and who knows whether he wrote it or one of his advisors wrote it, but it was a very well-crafted response posted in that forum where these comments were taking place, basically saying from the heart, you may not always agree, you're not going to agree with me necessarily on every issue, but you agree with me on 98% of the issues, and here's why I took this position. I don't expect you to agree with me, but I would hope that you could look past this and get behind me. And it really did diffuse that anger. And in fact, you know, it's been surprising to me, not to go into it too much, that as a president, as Phil mentioned, there's a difference between being a candidate and being an elected official. But it seems that President Obama has not been as aggressive or forward-looking in his communications as he was during the campaign, and perhaps would be better off if he was taking some of that approach. Just another quick example, there was a governor in Louisiana named Bobby Jindal. Some people, a lot of you may have heard of him now because of the big oil spill. He's very involved cleaning it up. It impacted his state in Louisiana. And there was a pay raise that was in front of the legislature in his state, for the legislators were going to vote themselves a pay raise. And it turned out that it came out that he was going to support this pay raise. He had not supported it yet, that he wouldn't veto it, that he was going to support this pay raise. And it was counter to promises he had made in his campaign. And people were, blogs were, you know, up in arms. People were writing in comments and all over social media and everything. Well, he actually changed his position and then came out with a similar from the heart post to President Obama, but said, you know, after seeing, you know, the reaction, I recognize that, you know, this is something that I just isn't right for my state. And, you know, obviously I'm sure it was calculated and there was polling that showed it was going to be too damaging for him to do that. But it's just both very, very smart approaches. Sometimes it may mean that you need to just deal with the reason they're angry and make sure they're not angry, which was the Governor Jindal case. In some cases, you may not be able to do that. It may not be the right move and it may be counter to who you are, but you shouldn't ignore it, because ignoring it is the worst thing you can do.
Well, I'll just give on the advice to the party.
Maybe these are very tactical ideas, but you're in one of those situations where obviously with an austerity agenda and having changed some of the promises that were made in the campaign, you should probably figure out what your strongest messages are in the platform that you're advancing. You should very aggressively work your social networks to make sure that you're getting your information in the terms that you want it into as many places as possible, and you should do that both on a you know, as collective people who work in the party to promote that message in a unified and consistent basis on the free channels that exist. Two, you should take advantage of paid online advertising proportionally through Google, Yahoo, MSN, other AOL, other platforms. Well, AOL not so much, but other platforms that allow you to project your message when people are looking for information about the CDU, Merkel, opposition candidates. As a party, you should be devoting resources to making sure you have paid communications. And then third, Terry hit on this, to the degree you can make it about the other guy, and you can use YouTubeable moments to capture, you know, crazy or stupid statements from individual candidates in regional elections, and you can get them on video, make it about them and try and shift the focus. And to some degree, that is probably the best way you can handle what's a tough spot that you're in. Or just some thoughts.
Stefan, haben Sie den Eindruck, dass die CDU in Deutschland das verstanden hat. Also es werden schon Kampagnen gespielt, wenn es um Griechenlandhilfen geht, da wird die Bild-Zeitung eingespannt. Das ist dann eine sehr klassische, analoge Form des Campaignings. Aber jetzt hier, was wir jetzt gerade gehört haben, Werbung über Google AdSense zu schalten für die CDU, das ist interessant, auf den Gegner zu gehen und das alles online. Ist die CDU schon soweit?
Ja, also wenn die Bild-Zeitung sich so vor den Karren spannen lassen würde, wie das immer behauptet wird, das wäre ja schön. Also die haben da schon ihre eigene Kampagne gemacht. Aber in der Tat sind Google AdWords natürlich eine gute Gelegenheit, wenn es um Themen geht, Leute, die auf der Suche nach Informationen sind, auf die eigenen Seiten zu lenken und eben die eigene Sicht der Dinge klarzumachen. Das macht die CDU auch. Allerdings mit den begrenzten Ressourcen. Ich meine, das fiel gerade, dass Herr Obama 80 Leute in seiner Online-Kampagne beschäftigt hatte. Das ist ungefähr die Anzahl der Mitarbeiter der CDU-Bundesgeschäftsstelle Tutte Kompletti, inklusive Pförtner und allen. Also wir reden halt über andere Verhältnisse und das betrifft eben auch das Budget, was wir in Nicht-Wahlkampfzeiten für Anzeigen und Google-Ads haben. Ja. Aber die Wege, die jetzt gerade beschrieben worden sind, sind natürlich taktisch die richtigen. Ich glaube aber, dass das Problem dieses Ärgers um die Politik das Entscheidende ist. Da wird man mit taktischen Tools halt nicht weiterkommen, sondern muss das Problem
lösen. Aber ist das nicht wieder ein klassisches konservatives Argument, was Sie jetzt auch gerade gesagt haben? Wenn man, also wir haben Facebook und es gibt in Deutschland einen Mitbewerber, der heißt StudiVZ. So StudiVZ hat 20 Techniker im Keller sitzen, Facebook 200. Es verwundert also nicht, dass Facebook auf Dauer einfach StudiVZ überholt. Also es ist doch eine Frage der Ressourcen. Wenn die SPD, also die Sozialdemokraten, einfach mehr Leute einsetzen, dann ist auch der Effekt und der Erfolg natürlich ganz anders programmierbar, als wenn die CDU sagt, ja, das ist halt so, die SPD ist halt schon immer besser da gewesen und da müssen wir halt, das müssen wir halt hinnehmen.
Ja, das tun wir nicht. Der Weg ist nur ein bisschen beschwerlicher. Also zum Glück ist es in Deutschland ja nicht so, dass der Einsatz von mehr Mitteln im Wahlkampf sich automatisch in mehr Stimmen niederschlägt. Das kann man ja, die Zahlen werden ja veröffentlicht mit einigem zeitlichen Abstand. Im Gegenteil. Also die erfolgreichsten Kampagnen sind bei weitem nicht immer die teuersten auch gewesen. Ich glaube nur, dass wir, wenn es jetzt um Social Media und Web 2.0 geht, da noch eine weite Strecke zu gehen haben. Und zwar insbesondere, weil dieser Ärger, sei es nun mit der aktuellen Regierungspolitik hier oder wie gerade beschrieben am Beispiel der Bush- und Obama-Administration, der entscheidende Motivationsfaktor häufig noch im Netz ist. Also in Deutschland hatten wir jetzt das Beispiel der Wahl des Bundespräsidenten, wo in den klassischen Medien ja sehr häufig geschrieben wurde, Herr Gauck, ein respektabler Kandidat, und für den engagieren sich 30.000 Leute auf Facebook. Wenn man sich die Gruppen aber angeguckt hat, dann standen da Sachen wie, die neue Art Nein zu sagen ist für Gauck zu sein. Also auch da war, obwohl es in einem positiven Gewand herkommt, wieder der Ärger über Nominierungsprozesse etc. pp. Die Triebfeder für den Online-Aktivismus. Und da muss man halt noch gucken, wie dreht man das positiv, damit wir da auch mehr mitmachen können.
Vielleicht ist das eine gute Gelegenheit, wieder eine Frage an die amerikanischen Gäste zu richten. Wir hatten in der den Leuten, die hier vor allem aus dem Adenauerhaus kommen, vielleicht was mit auf den Weg zu geben. Gerade die Kampagne zur Präsidentschaftswahl war sehr interessant, dass die meisten Medien oder die meisten Online-Medien sich auf den Kandidat der Sozialdemokraten und der Grünen, Herrn Gauck, festgelegt haben. Und wenn Sie sich dann erlaubt haben, im Netz was zu schreiben über Herrn Wulff, ich habe eine Kolumne geschrieben in unserem Magazin, 3 Gründe, warum Christian Wulff ein guter Präsident ist. Das wurde auf mehreren größeren Portalen von mehreren 100.000 Leuten gelesen. Und unten drunter waren dann immer sofort einige Posts, die sagten, nein, aber Gauck ist besser. Und ich halte das und ich bin mir ziemlich sicher, dass, weil das auf vielen Portalen so war, natürlich auch eine Gegenkampagne der Sozialdemokraten war, um im Web sozusagen auch aktiv zu sein. Ich hatte nicht den Eindruck, dass die CDU da auf der Höhe der Zeit ist. Können Sie vielleicht diese viralen und Spinning-Momente hier mal in der Runde erklären, wie sich das beeinflusst? Denn aus meiner Sicht ist so, wenn ich unter einem Artikel dreimal lese, Gauck ist eigentlich besser, dass ich als Konsument dann am Ende auch denke, das ist die Stimme des Volkes und das ist das, was die Mehrheit denkt. Und ich übernehme diese Meinung auch. Vielleicht haben Sie da mal ein paar klärende Gedanken.
Mindy? Well, then, can you put a bullet on the last, in English, on the last part of the question?
For me, it's all to tell the people here how important it is to spin also online, to get to know the idea. Yeah, but that is, I think it's not really learned here. So that is something where we can profit from your experience.
It's new. It's not just here. It's new in America, too. I mean, the growth of Facebook since the 2008 election has just been explosive. So, Facebook is the largest growing population of online community in the world. The demographics of who's actually making it grow are very interesting. It's not kids. It's the fastest growing segment on Facebook is actually women over 45 years old. So, you know, you need to understand that, and you should consider you should consider a variety of different ways to use it. And if you have watched just how intensity of interest is being tracked today, Facebook is a key monitor of it, along with Google. If you watch the World Cup and some of the searches related to the activity on Facebook, it just shows you when you have intensity of interest how quickly messaging can happen. So use Facebook, advertise on Facebook. One of the things that you, if the CDU is not, this always comes down to money, right? This is about resources. Are we going to put them over here? Are we going to put them over here? One of the unique and transformative realities of the internet is that it allows you to raise money for low cost. That was a huge, huge lesson of Obama. That was also the lesson of Scott Brown's campaign. Scott Brown raised $12 million in 10 days in the United States of America. $12 million in 10 days. Mindy's firm processed all that. Every time the contribution would go off, her internet hurt her little bing, 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 bing. Mindy made just a penny on each of those contributions. No, no, it was an amazing reality. So the internet, you know, allows you to do low cost fundraising, and then Facebook, you know, you should be advertising because the metrics that you can get from advertising on Google, Facebook, it tells you if it's working. It tells you, you know, who's clicking. You only pay when people click. And so your ability to understand who's coming in to read your message, how long they're staying, and where they're coming from, more importantly, is really critical. Because if you understand where your audience is coming from, maybe you should be spending more time going to where they're coming from, because it's likely that people who are like them are going to be interested in your message.
Let me just add another thing. When you come to social networks, we have one in the south, and it's one part where we have an election next year. It's Wer kennt wen in Rheinland-Pfalz. This is in the southern part. We have the prime minister who is in office for 12 years. We have a young, fresh woman from the CDU. So I'd rather say she should really focus on this network, which is very regional. Would you recommend that? And what would she has to do there to in order to be the winner?
Well, I don't know a lot about the reach of that particular social network. You know,
it's huge. It's immense. This region is number one.
Well, then absolutely. You know, and also there are particular candidates who just naturally. Those who go to social networks are gonna take to over others. And if this is someone who is a younger person, who is a good communicator, who you know, has a way with saying things that are provocative and compelling, then the more that person can put out content and messaging unfiltered to individuals. The positives are going to far outweigh any negatives, and absolutely there's no reason not to do it. You know, obviously it's controversial, but an example in the U.S. is someone who has done extremely well on Facebook, which is the biggest one in the U.S. In fact, they say 110 million people have Facebook profiles, which is close to 30% of the U.S. population. But a person is Sarah Palin. Because she would post these kind of raw, I don't know how raw they are, but seemed canned messaging, press release style type of posts on Facebook. They appeared very human. And so, you know, and one thing is, first of all, knowing that you should use the network, but number two is, how do you communicate via the network, which is different, obviously, than you would be communicating to a press or even a blogger. And one of the beauties of these social networks is that people don't go on the social network usually to get involved in politics. They go on the network for social reasons, to keep up with friends, to, you know, the women over 45 in the U.S. are going on because their children are now, you know, in college and they want to keep up with them, or they have grandchildren that they want to see pictures of. And so that is the reason that they're going on there. But that makes it more powerful as a political tool because these are individuals who you are not reaching through your typical outreach. They're not press. They're not the influentials and the super activists. They're real people who could actually get out and vote.
This is his point. If the information is relevant, it will find me through my network. I'm not still searching for any political information anymore. I'm just going on Facebook and will get it from my people.
I mean, we all do that. Even like in our magazine, we have like a Facebook group and we post our content. But it's not just that we can post the content one-on-one. It's just that we have to give something which is added value. Just like it's like if you ask a question, what do you think about this and that, or something like what could be the added value for a politician on Facebook, for instance? I mean, it's something in between. This law has passed, and I'm on a grill barbecue party. So something in between. So, but I think what I see. Most of our politicians are really having a hard time to find what would be the right way to navigate through social media and get the added value.
I think American politicians are too. You know, there are ways to monetize Facebook. You can create widgets that, you know, directly link to your own fundraising pages through Facebook. So you can now, there's technology available to turn Facebook into a fundraising tool. It hasn't, I think, been proven, I mean, in a wide-scale basis that's really worked. Facebook is an organizing and get out the vote operation and tool has not been proven and has not been, you know, necessarily proven as a model. But I think looking forward, if we accept the fact that social networking is increasingly going to be a trend that's going to drive how communities link together, I think Palin in the United States investing heavily in this presence, and frankly Romney following behind and other leading politicians building aggressively towards growing their Facebook profile is smart. Increasingly, you know, I think that, you know, your television gross rating, you know, your rating points will be measured by what comes through here in about 3 or 4 years. And so the ability to, you know, to bring more technology and more connectivity through this portal is important. And if you believe that social communication and social networking tools are central to it, there's some element of risk, and again, it's free, so it's worth trying, and it's certainly a good way to advertise about events. And you know, for your local candidate, if she's a young, attractive, articulate, dynamic person, I'd localize it and make it about her personality, as opposed to the less popular elements of maybe CDU platform. And then again, I'd send someone with a camera around here, a little flip phone, to go follow her opponent everywhere they went, and make sure if they say something stupid.
Somebody in here who can tell that to Julia Kröckner and give these advices over to her.
Yeah. The one thing I would add, which we should not forget, is that, you know, campaigns and candidates have to be relevant to voters. And whether we're communicating to them on a TV ad or in a news story or on Facebook or Twitter. And what's relevant to one voter may not be relevant to another voter. And so knowing as much about the people that you're communicating with so that you're making sure to deliver relevant content to them, I think is really critical. That's, I think, an easier process in the U.S. with our ability to generate lists and databases about individual voters. But it's critical. It's not an online point, but I think it's critical when we communicate with whatever list we're communicating to, and Facebook is another list that we're going to communicate to, that what we put out is relevant to those voters, and if it's relevant, they'll read it. And, you know, I just think that's a hard thing to do, but it's the critical thing to do.
Just a couple just quick points to exclamation point on that is when we talk about resources, and you're talking about whether this candidate should put focus on this social network, often, you know, campaigns now have gotten to the point where they recognize we need someone to focus on our website, and we're going to put money in building a website and building technology. And the next step now is getting to the point where they understand the value is not just those who are going to come to our website. That's the best if they can come and they can contribute money or, you know, read our email. But these people are already out there online, so it's going to them. And then number two is when I work with local candidates, an interesting thing I see is people will send messages through Facebook or posts on the wall about, you know, I want I want to volunteer, you know, when is the next event in X area, you know, their area. They're looking at it as a headquarters, as a place to get this information, and not enough, even in the U.S., not enough campaigns put value in that to where they're communicating and following up with that person in the same way as if that person would call their campaign office or walk in. And so it is important to have someone monitoring those opportunities, or else you're missing out on individuals who are willing to volunteer.
Coming back to this one point I mentioned before, how important do you see the monitoring of coverage on portals and news sites? How important is that for spinning and for
being aware of it and tracking?
Yeah,
tracking it,
and on the other side to really get involved yourself. I mean, it's nothing that you have to make something up. I'm quite sure that in the CDU Germany there were like a few guys who were really in favor of Mr. Wolf, and they would have just posted something on underneath the articles if somebody had told them that this is kind of a mechanism to really express yourself. I have the idea that this is not really in the midst of the Christian Democrats here in this country already.
I think that in the U.S., what I'll call the online debate, what happens in blogs, what happens in Facebooks, what happens in Twitter, the online debate is the critical first battle in any contest between the two parties or two candidates or whatever. And so in the U.S., it's very critical to have your voice out there, to have your messages out there, and to manage what's going on in the online debate as aggressively as possible. At election time, you know, almost every voter is paying attention to what's going to happen. But early in the process, you know, the most influential voters are really paying attention to what's going on, to what the debate is. These are the opinion, what we call the opinion elites. I'm sure you have a similar term for them. And being able to win over the opinion elites is, you know, one of the first steps to winning the political argument that you're going to engage in, which is why I think blogs are really important. In some of the professional work I've done in politics and outside politics, if you can, what you will typically see is the debate manifests itself online. The journalists, the mainstream journalists watching the debate online, and many of them parroting that debate. What's happened in the U.S. to newspapers is that they have lost budget, and they no longer have the research departments that they used to have. They also, individual reporters, also cover a lot more stories than they used to have to cover because most newsrooms have had significant layoffs. So what's happened is that in many instances, bloggers have become experts on different policy areas, and journalists have to go to the bloggers because they know more about the subject. They oftentimes have the actual news first, and the journalists look to them as experts in the field and will cover it. And so influencing that debate, having people online who will advance your points, whether it's the comment section of a newspaper or the debate that's on a blog, is, I think, very critical to winning a campaign in the United States.
I think you absolutely have to monitor, but in today's world, it can drive you crazy. You know, in a previous, even a decade ago, certainly 2 decades ago, you had to monitor a few newspapers for their headlines and TV, a few channels, you know, on TV news, at least in the U.S. I know it's similar here. Now, there's, you know, the danger is that you have so many sources that you have to monitor that it can drive you crazy. However, the opportunity is that you can catch stories before they blow up, before they become really big and damaging, or perhaps look for opportunities to make them damaging for your opponent, because you catch a little nugget on Twitter that someone, you know, mentions that is relevant to your candidate or your campaign. Or you read something in a small local blog that you can then push out and make it a huge mainstream news story.
I did not only refer to blogs and minor pages. I really mean like the leading news pages.
And one of the ways, I mentioned this earlier, and one of the things I would think that the CDU should be doing is, if there's, you know, if there's a story that negatively talks about your platform or positively talks about your platform, you can, on a keyword basis, you know, advertise your message into those forums. So if, you know, for the larger online news sites here in Germany, political parties should be investing resources to getting their message out on a paid cost per click basis, contextually or content, you know, contextually targeted towards keywords relevant to a certain set of issues, so that voters, at least when they read a story, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to the comments and blog section that go underneath, you know, a lot of the mainstream, you know, coverage, because I think it's largely a small and binary group of very vociferously, you know, it's a small group, you're never going to win. If people are seeing a message and a lot of people are looking at it, tactically, from an online campaigning perspective, you should be going through the search engines to make sure to be paying to have your message there. Do you guys do that?
Yes, during the campaign. Ich mache den Part mal auf Deutsch. Diese Analyse der Blogs, aber auch der Kommentarspalten, ich glaube, dass sie nicht völlig unterschätzt werden dürfen, in Deutschland zumindest, ist, glaube ich, ein wichtiger Punkt. Da gibt es ja auch eine Menge Software, die einen dabei unterstützt. Unsere Erfahrung im Wahlkampf ist eben, man gewinnt durch die Software einen relativ guten Überblick. Wir hatten ungefähr 180 Quellen aus dem Web 2.0, die da laufend analysiert wurden, auf einer täglichen Basis. Man braucht trotzdem immer noch Menschen, die sich das angucken, gewichten und bewerten und dann daraus eben Kampagnenvorschläge ableiten oder zumindest die relevanten Informationen rausfiltern. Da sind wir wieder bei dem Thema Ressourcen. Das kann ich machen in Wahlkampfphasen. Das wird jetzt, obwohl es jetzt mindestens ebenso wichtig ist, recht schwierig. Wir suchen gerade einen Weg, aber ich denke, dass wir das finden werden. Aber daraus lassen sich in der Tat beide Beispiele, die Sie genannt hatten, hatten wir auch im Wahlkampf, Stories ziehen, mit denen wir was machen können oder die wir dann eben gegen die wir frühzeitig angehen können. Ja. Und man kann es sogar, ein netter Aspekt, man kann es sehr gut kombinieren mit freiwilligen Kampagnen, Volunteer-Campaigns, wenn man es umdreht und sagt, wir verknüpfen diese Software zum Beispiel auch mit Unterstützungsleistungen. Wenn ihr jetzt twittert, die CDU hat Folgendes super gemacht und packt den entsprechenden Hashtag dahinter, kann die Software gleichzeitig sagen, dafür kriegst du 20 Punkte im Volunteerprogramm gut geschrieben. Also es funktioniert ja sowohl als Scan als auch als Aktivierungsmodul. Das hat sehr gut funktioniert.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, and we do a lot of that. So there's an example of, like, you know, I use Twitter, I use something called TweetDeck. I don't know how many people here use that, but there are similar applications where you can do a search for multiple, because I work with multiple candidates or you're concerned about multiple issues, and you do a search for those terms, and I have those columns up. And sometimes, even if I don't post anything, you know, all day, but I'm still looking at it to see what is coming up on those search terms. And it's amazing. And you can find it, you know, in politics, you can find it really about any issue. I mean, I had small, quick example. I had some family visiting, and they flew on an airline that the day they came to visit, that went on strike. And so we weren't sure what was going to happen with their return flight. And this is elderly family. So I was trying to explain Twitter to them. So I used the example, and I said, well, here, I'll do a search for, I don't want to give away the name of the airline, but, you know, X Airlines, and the first thing I see is strike ended on X Airlines. And it literally just happened 2 minutes before I did this search. And it was amazing because then we could call up and be one of the first to get online to deal with it. That's the type of thing that is happening in politics as well. And you might be able to see it in comments on some of these, on blogs, on main news sites. To your resources point, though, one thing that I've done, and I don't know that you always have the luxury of this, but early on in campaigns, even before they really get going, there's always these volunteers who really just want to do something. They really want to help. And because of the modern campaign and because of the resource issue, you often don't have a physical thing for them to do until much closer to the actual election. So we formed, we call a media corps, of individuals who are on a listserv or one-person emails, and they're not necessarily bloggers, but they're people who you want to be getting these, who want to receive the instant news. As you receive something that might be a problem or might be a story that should get out, you're sending it to them. Obviously, you're encouraging them to become more of an influencer out there spreading it. But sometimes you might say, you know, there's a poll on this website, go vote on it and get all your friends to. Or there's, you know, a news story and they're really beating up on us in the comments. Go in and wade in. Now, the value may not be huge, but the amount of resources it takes from your organization is very small. So you're not wasting a lot of time on it. You're getting these individuals active, and not only that, you're keeping them invested in your campaign and your candidate and feeling like they're doing something that's of value to the campaign, and they become more valuable because they're really learning about the issues and the messaging.
Authenticity, you know, realness is very important. So going back to challenges are very good. You know, challenging your online community to do something and giving them goals, very smart thing to do. Using video, having your candidate take the time to, with a flip phone, do a quick message about something that he's done personally or something that he or she has done politically, and then posting that is a much better way than kind of doing it the old-fashioned way. So think about how to integrate video into your strategies as you promote your candidates. It's really, I think, where the future is going almost across the board. And that's a great way to, you know, find increased engagement, especially as you're talking about posts on social networks.
I'd like to open the stage now for your questions. We've got still half an hour left. So I'm not sure whether or not there's some guy with a microphone, or are these mics working at the tables?
Yeah,
so it should... Okay, just press the button, say who you are and whom you would like to ask something. Are there any questions?
Hello, my name is Jörg Buhl. I work for the federal government. I was just wondering whether there is an inherent tendency in all those internet campaigns that in the end people want to even cast their vote in the internet. Or are you thinking to the contrary, that somebody who discusses politics in the internet and is in all these blogs has left a sense for the dignity of casting a little white paper sheet into a ballot box in the end?
In my own view, if I take the question correctly, my own view is that the most of the people who are engaged online are pretty committed to the process overall, and ultimately the process of voting, and that online activity is not undertaken out of any kind of, I think, disenfranchisement with the kind of the normal electoral process, but is more because this is a person who is motivated for whatever reason by the views that they hold, and they want a platform to get those views, you know, out more widely. And this is, you know, this obviously is one of the revolutionary impacts just overall of the internet, that anybody who has a compelling message and an ability to be, you know, to work hard to promote that message can have a platform to say what's on their mind when they want to say it. And so we have this very diffuse communications environment that campaigns in the U.S. have to live in. That is, as we talked about earlier in an earlier group, you know, it's a little bit like anarchy. You can't control it. Campaigns have to give up, you know, to some extent, the centralized way that they have promoted their messages, and give tools to other people to get the message out in a way that is most comfortable for them, whether they're a blogger or sharing it in their social network. So if I took the question correctly, I think that, you know, the folks who are engaged online by and large are pretty committed to the process and pretty committed to changing something that they believe should be changed.
They still got to vote, though, absentee, or they got to show up. That'll never change, I don't think.
Yeah.
You got to still haul yourself down to some precinct, and rain and snow and weather still matters in our elections to some degree. So I think in America, online activity is a key part of it, but you're going to have to either go to the ballot box or get an absentee ballot to vote. I don't think it'll ever go online. Maybe I'm wrong, but that opens up, you know, with our great track record of recounts and our inability to conduct elections, I think we'll probably have go into the ballot box for a while.
Ja, es ist ja ein Hauptteil der Kampagnenarbeit, genau diesen Effekt dann auch zu erreichen. Kommen wir jetzt nochmal auf Herrn Obama und seine Kampagne zurück. Den Teil, den fast alle hier gesehen haben werden, wird dieses Video sein, in dem halt so dieses personalisierte E-Mail-Video, in dem halt dann zu hören und zu sehen war, weil, warum hat Herr Obama jetzt nicht gewonnen? Weil Stefan Hennewig nicht bei der Wahl war. Ja, so, das war technisch sehr interessant und das war eben ein wichtiger Bestandteil der Kampagne zu sagen, schön, dass ihr euch jetzt die letzten 6, 8, 12 Monate online für mich engagiert habt, aber es nützt alles nichts, wenn ihr nicht auch dann zur Wahl geht und wenn ihr euch nicht registrieren lasst. Und das ist in Deutschland die gleiche Herausforderung. Ich glaube, man darf es eben nicht fokussieren auf Online-Aktivitäten und Online-Kampagnen, sondern muss von vornherein sagen, Online ist ein Standbein für die Kampagne. Das Ziel ist aber nicht, 50.000 Leute auf Facebook zu gewinnen, sondern das Ziel ist, dass möglichst viele am Ende dann zur Wahl gehen oder das Gesetz gut finden, es verstanden haben, was in dem Ministerium gemacht wurde oder.
You know, the internet has changed everything on a micro level, but it's changed nothing on a macro level when it comes to politics, and that you ultimately have to get the most votes to win. Now, that being said, if you back it out, if somebody's excitement level for you is here as opposed to here, because you've built this relationship with them online and they felt like they're this big part of your campaign, it's much easier to get them to turn out to vote for you as opposed to whether they feel like they don't have any kind of allegiance to your candidacy at all.
I'll take, since I know where the button is. I got two questions. First of all, one of the most underestimated campaigns, of course, of 2008 is the John McCain campaign. I mean, with his votes, he would have beat Kerry in 2004. So he must have had a pretty good campaign. Now, taking his age and taking the internet, there might be the idea that maybe this is not, you know, the closest fit. Had there been any strategies of reaching voters of his own age on the internet? First question. And then the second one, you were just saying the internet just changes politics on the micro level. It changes politics, of course, but does it change also policy? That would be my other question. Since we have such a rapid development of the news cycle, pressure on getting information solutions, do you think it actually has an effect on how policy is done, like in a good or a bad way?
I mean, the McCain campaign did some things well. Their eyes opened up when they picked Sarah Palin, you know, for vice president, and they raised $7 million in a day or two. And all of a sudden you had someone who no one in America had ever heard become the most searched human on the planet in a matter of days. It opens your eyes to the power of search. And I think the campaign of which, you know, and we should ask Liz to jump in on this too, because she worked for the McCain, well, for the Republican National Committee and can speak to it more specifically. But the McCain campaign did a very good job of responding to what was happening online as it related to the campaign, advertising against it to grow a list. And they probably did less well with respect to the use of technology like iPhone applications that, you know, I don't know if you ever saw the Barack Obama iPhone app that they developed. Pretty incredible. I mean, it could tell you where to vote. It could give you the latest news feed. You know, it opted you in based on your interest, and if you came in interested in guns, you're talking about guns. Interested in God, you're talking about God. Their ability is on the technology front was enhanced, and then they used text and mobile in a way that McCain really didn't. So if you remember how Joe Biden was announced as the vice presidential pick for the Democrats, it was by text message, and you asked what McCain did well. My basic view is he did very well on the search-based side of people looking for information and for trends that were emerging and advertising into those trends, but they were out-hustled on technology, the MyBO platform, and on the mobile to text. And text to mobile is another critical piece from a tactical perspective of what any major political party should be focused on, because the read rate on text delivery versus email is not even comparable. I mean, how many people in this audience get spam email all the time? Everybody. Yeah, come on. Anyone who doesn't raise their hand, I don't believe you. But if you get a text message, how many people in this room generally will look at your text message? So the point is, you'll go to the spam message, you'll see it's a spam from something you opted into, and you'll click delete. But text is another key tactical element that will be only more important going forward. So for your lady who's running in down south there, make sure she's collecting texts too. On the policy side, someone else.
I'll just make one point. On the McCain side, part of the lacking was a frame of mind, which is probably a more institutional frame of mind. You know, the kind of not thinking that announcing your VP pick via text message was presidential, whereas the Obama campaign did that and was able to collect 2 million mobile numbers because they said, we're going to announce it here first. That was just smart tactics that the McCain campaign might not be willing to do. However, as Terry, I think, mentioned at the beginning part of this conversation, it sometimes doesn't matter how good your online platform is, your online strategy, and your talent. If you don't have the right message at the right message to the right candidate at the right time, there's only a certain amount of barrier that you can overcome. And I do not think that the lacking in an online campaign side can be blamed for McCain not winning the general election. Now, there might have been some little votes moved there, here and there. But when the economy the economy became the big issue right there at the end of the general election campaign, plus all the 8 years of the unifying anger at Republicans, the Bush administration, I just don't think that could have been overcome. But the primary, as we talked about, was a different story. In the Obama-Hillary fight, there definitely was a disconnect between the two on their approach to online campaigning, and Hillary campaign consultants even saying, we're not concerned about all these young voters showing up in Iowa because they look like Facebook, where our supporters look like caucus goers. And at the end of the day, thousands of new people showed up at the Iowa caucuses, and Obama won the Iowa caucuses. So that matters. I don't think it's a very big question, and with the answer in a little bit of time about the policy front, and it's something I think about a lot, but I'm certainly not an expert on, which is that I said the very basic point that that internet has changed everything about politics on a micro level, hasn't really changed anything on a macro level. I don't know that that's 100% true. I think it remains to be seen. We've seen, at least in the U.S., we feel like it does seem like that in campaigns, candidates get very excited about this. They involve people in the process. They empower them. People get involved. They get excited, and they certainly have an impact on who gets elected. Now, do they have an impact on the legislative level, on the policy level? Less so, but we're starting to see, particularly in the Republicans and the minority in the U.S., understanding that we may need to engage our public. We have all these Tea Party activists who are angry, and there's an example of a program called UCUT that the second in line of Republicans in the House of Representatives put out there that allows people to suggest and then vote on pieces of the budget that they think should be cut. And there's been these kinds of gimmicks, I could say, before. But one thing, they've gone a step further, which I think is very important, in that they discuss these on the House floor. This becomes part of the discussion with their colleagues as opposed to an internet gimmick that's happening in a silo. I think the jury's still out on what kind of impact is going to have on legislation and policy at the end of the day, but we certainly see signs of legislators reaching out to kind of online community, really not just online community, but voters, constituents, and saying, What is your input? What do you want to see done? And then going on and actually moving towards enacting that on the policy level.
I'll try to add a quick comment or two. I think that it's hard to look at the kind of the internal policy deliberation process and say that has changed fundamentally because of the internet. I do think, though, to amplify a point that Mindy made, that the ability to have a constituency have impact on the direction of policy is much greater than it used to be. I recall working in a campaign in the early 90s, and there was an issue that came up in the Congress. I was working for an incumbent member of Congress, and we were inundated with phone calls, which was kind of the typical way for people to get engaged. But And on that particular issue, which dealt with, I think, homeschooling, whether there was going to be some kind of federal law that dealt with parents teaching their children at home, the time to communicate the information out, you know, at that time was a little bit slower than it is today. And so I'll just give a recent example, which was Sarah Palin posted on her Facebook account about the inclusion of what she called death panels in healthcare legislation. And the moment between her posting that and that becoming a big news item, you know, was lightning fast. And so the ability to organize a constituency to try to impact legislation, I think now happens much more rapidly. People have much more access to get the information much more quickly, and they have tools, online tools, to communicate directly into offices in addition to phone calls and those kinds of things.
That's largely what's been behind the Tea Party. I mean, you've heard of the Tea Party movement in our country, Tea Party. It's angry, you know, it's really frustrated people who are using technology to organize, and the impact could be that we have, I don't know, maybe five or six candidates who could be elected to United States Senate who I think would raise their hand and say, are you a Tea Party, do you represent the Tea Party, who would raise their hand like this and say, I represent the Tea Party, and they will go to Washington, and our Senate, our higher chamber, you know, tends to play by a more a traditional set of rules, and it's a less passionate chamber, but the result of, I think, a technology provides a platform for candidates like this to emerge, and if they get elected this fall, I think they're going to have less regard for the traditional rules and the way the game is played in Washington and the United States Senate. We've seen this in the past. We had this happen in 1980 in our country, and I think we could have it again this fall, where we get a lot more Republicans in the United States Senate, but the caucus may respond very differently because there are four or five people who are going to go there and just really don't care about the system. They just want to cut spending. They want to shrink government, and they have a vision that they feel very compelled to hold. That's just my gut. It could play out. You know, we'll see. It's a big election year in America this year. We got a very volatile electorate. There's a real possibility that we Republicans win back the United States House of Representatives. Terry, he does a lot of work with Senate around the country and can speak to those, but it's a very, very volatile electorate right now.
I got three more questions. I would like you guys to come straight to the point and you guys to answer them the same way so that we can close this panel at 6:30 as announced. So, Ayans, that's why.
First of all, I want to know our American friends that among conservative parties, the CDU is a particular bird because it is a poor party and has not enough money for campaigning. Therefore, my question, what percentage of a budget you generally used in a campaign for online campaigning? It's 20%, 50%. It's growing. Perhaps you can tell something about this.
It's Mindy and I's favorite subject. Go ahead, Mindy.
Well, I mean, there's two pieces. So I know at least in the U.S., there's usually a media budget, which comprises the majority of a campaign budget, because a portion of that goes to TV advertising, a portion goes to radio advertising. Usually mail would be under there. So the big debate in the U.S. is more on that. What percentage of that media budget, paid advertising, paid communication, should go to the Internet? And if you look at the commercial world, if you look at what corporations are doing, that's the piece of advertising that's growing, where others are declining or remaining stagnant. So they're going up to 20-25% depending on the brand. We're doing a big kind of push in the U.S., those of us who are big believers in this, to say you should be spending at least 10% of your budget. Now, that being said, online advertising is still relatively cheap compared to TV advertising. So spending 10% doesn't mean it's only the important 10%, you're reaching 10% of your electorate. You could be reaching more, but because it's relatively cheap, it ends up being about 10%. Again, it varies. There are local candidates, for example, who may not have the budget to be able to run any kind of significant television advertising. and they may not run any television advertising at all, which means their media budget is much smaller, so the percentage of online could be up to 50% or more if that's the way, you know, the major way they're going to be depending on getting their message out.
I think this is really going to change, and it's again, you know, where are eyeballs going to get information about politics? 65% of voters in America are going online to get their, you know, as a primary source of information about politics. But yet our advertising budget in the last presidential campaign for online activity was maybe 1.5%, 2%. I mean, there's a case study that's kind of interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with the state of Texas. In our state of Texas, there's a governor named Rick Perry. He's liked by the Tea Party. He ran a primary campaign against a well-known United States senator named Kay Bailey Hutchinson, and he didn't send a single piece of mail in his primary. He used social networking and he advertised aggressively online, spent a lot of money on television. I don't want to misrepresent the power of television. I think television is still here. I actually think that voter contact mail is very effective. I'm not just saying that because I have good colleagues here in the room who do it, but the point is that there are new models being experimented with, and Mindy's point is if you have a really big budget, television is obviously still king, but if you have a very lean budget, you understand when you invest online what you're getting in return, and you understand it in real time because the tools are there to gauge it.
Hi, my name is Neil Walther. I'm doing an internship here in the German Parliament. I have a question about these so-called Tea Party candidates. What do their prospects look like in the fall? And also, specifically, I'm from Washington State originally. What are the chances of Dino Rossi unseating Patty Murray? Thank you.
I'll start with Dino Rossi. I think, and as Phil said, I do a lot of consulting for the Senate Republicans. The prospects for Dino Rossi are pretty good. In most of the surveys that have come out recently, publicly and privately, he's really dead even with Patty Murray. And so he has an excellent prospect. He raised a lot of money right outside the gate. I think it'll be a very competitive election up till the end. But as you know, Washington State is a state that certainly has a Democratic tilt to it. And overcoming that is going to be difficult. The overall political environment for Republicans in the country is really excellent. So he has the best shot to defeat her, you know, that we probably have had since she was first elected. In regard to the Tea Party candidates, I think in some senses it's too early to say, and we won't fully know what the outcome is. It's certainly, you know, I certainly think you could say that they've had a more challenging time with the mainstream media than mainstream conservative Republicans have had, in part because they feel very passionately about some issues that have not always been center stage in the political debate. There's, I think, most prominently two Republicans who would identify themselves with the Tea Party. One is Rand Paul, who is running for election in the state of Kentucky. And I think Rand Paul has an excellent shot of being a member of the United States Senate. He got out of the gate and said some things that caused him, embroiled him in controversy. But Kentucky is a Republican state. It's, you know, in this election environment, even more, you know, would be even tilted more aggressively towards the Republican side. I think that he will likely be the victor. I think it's harder to say in Nevada, not because I think our candidate there is any less electable than Rand Paul. It's a much more competitive state. And on the ballot in the state of Nevada, you can actually vote for none of the above. And so it's possible, and I think in this election, I think this race will be very close. It's possible in this election, and I think likely, that neither candidate will get a majority of the vote, and that, you know, whoever wins will get somewhere probably in the mid 40s. The anger against Harry Reid is very high. It's been high for really the whole campaign. I think he has a very difficult road in front of him, and I think Sharon Angle has not really made the case yet for why she should be a United States senator, even though she at the outset had some critical press attention. She's dead even to a head of Reid, depending on the survey that you look at. And so I think Rand Paul, given the nature of the state, almost certain to get elected. I think Angle, given the nature of that state, tougher contest. But I think Harry Reid's approval ratings, if you look at all the candidates for Senate who've lost over the last three election cycles, Reid's are the lowest, and they're not lowest, the lowest by like 3 points, they're the lowest by like 15 points, just to give you some context of where he kind of stands. He's got a very tough campaign.
Well, thank you guys on the panel. Thanks for spending time with us and sharing your experiences. Thank you for coming, though the weather is hot and you could have imagined doing something else. So enjoy the evening. Bye-bye. Wiedersehen.